the drugs came to Harlem and they said that that was the end thing, and it was. So naturally I gravitated to the people that was slick and fly shop mix and all of that that went with it. Panama's and after school them, all the dress codes that they had in the 60s. And at that time they wasn't selling it to young people. And we had to get somebody that was either a wino or somebody to get it. And a lot of us was able to get off on a bag, you know. It was like that. And a lot of people didn't make it. They died early in the game. And the progression started out, you know, you're skinning, you're maining, and you're doing all that type of stuff. So I went through all the amphetamines, barbiturates, and things like that, hallucinogenics. But my thing was dope. And the people I was with, we was playing basketball, and you know, after the game, we bought wine and lit and lined it up in the schoolyard. Gypsy rolls, you know, the wines that they don't sell no more. And we just got nice. And at that time, cocaine was very expensive. It was $10. And, and we wasn't down with that, you know. But there was one dope fiend that he had a bag of cocaine and he didn't want to sell it. But he had somebody that begged him up and down the street to give it up. He knew what he had, and when we finally got it, it was distributed to everybody that was in the park, and all he needed was a one-in-one. And it was like when the snow's on the car, and you scoop it, and that's how it was. Take together, and it was crystallized, it was heavy. And that was the beginning of something that that I tried to capture as long as I've been getting high. And I can't ever seem to get that in original form. And I start, the people I was with, they were sniffing. And like, when you start putting the, messing with the needle, they look at you kind of different, mm-hmm. you know. So when I started going with that type of crowd, that was it. I was with the people with the battle scars and the trademarks, and it was an honor to have a track when you, in your pit area. You know, you could actually go cop, and you go to some places they want to see your track. I got to put on my turtleneck, you know, that type of thing. And in the beginning, it was nice, but then after a while, you just don't care. You start nodding and slobbing and all of that, and you thought that you was okay. But people started whispering on the side, and nobody knew but you. Oh, boy. And this journey thing is just goes back so far. I mean, you know, I'm not really focused too much because my mother's on a respirator right now, and it's like all my energy was focused in on that, but she's hanging in there, I guess, long enough for me to let you know that you can recover if anybody had lost their parents or anything like that. And these, you know, it's a day at a time. I came to this program in 1977 in the other fellowship, and they wasn't talking about drugs. They said, if you got a problem with alcohol, take that shit down the street. So I had to keep coming to listen and keep listening until I was fortunate that somebody actually spoke about drugs. And they did that for a minute, and then they went back to the alcohol. So, and besides, all the people was kind of old at that time, you know. And like, I was not there. I was looking for somebody that had a few years left in them, you know. But alcohol does a vicious thing to the body, whether you're male or female, whatever. And I wasn't that bad. Most people, when they come in a program like this, they have to be beat down. And I wasn't there yet, so I figured I had a few more years. When I get like that, then I'll come in. But right now, the dope was pretty good. It's just that you had to go to different boroughs to get the right hookup. And that took a lot of energy. And my day was shot, especially on Sunday. Well, in the beginning, Sundays was hard. But when they started opening up the stores on Sundays, it was ice cream, you know. So Sundays could be the best day of the week. But I took pride in not having any kind of record or anything indicating that I had a problem with drugs. So I felt good until I got busted with drug glassine bags and drug paraphernalia, needles and shit like that. And I was busted in the project because I had shot something that was so nice, I started tap dancing. You know, making a whole bunch of noise. The guy put me out in a hole, you know. And like, people don't, you know, they look out the peephole and, you know, they call the cops on me. So, naturally, it ain't me and all that. And they took me down in this, down the ramp in the project, you know. And, I was embarrassed, you know, when your parents get involved in that stuff like that, you know, they take sides, but, you know, hey. Naturally, that didn't tell me that I had a problem. It's just when I started to get high to the point where I couldn't find no more veins. And I had to go places where they had to hit me in my neck. I had to pay $5 for that. And that became a problem until I started carrying a mirror and I was doing myself. And that went on to the point where it was just a bad scene. And I didn't even notice it until I had went to a detox and came back to the same scene. And the funk was I didn't know how I was dealing with it at the time. You won't only know that unless you in the game. But when you're away from it a while and go back to it, you start to get familiar with it. Because I got high with people, that guy uptown named Claude, he had maggots in his arm that was actually moving around, and you actually smelt him a block away. He must be here. And that was his name. You had a guy named Spot. You got all these people from uptown. I got high with inside abandoned buildings around crates and bricks and all that stuff. Candles, they love candles, you know. That was the electricity that they had. And they had to have that. But most of the old timers uptown, they didn't go in unless they had a wake up. And what it was with me, I didn't want to get like that because that would have been a career. And I didn't want to get like that. So I couldn't keep no dope past 12 o'clock anyway. I'd wake up every 5 minutes to see if it was still there. And all that type of stuff. And I usually shot dope until at noon I knew I would be ill. So I knew I had to get in the stores before noon. And it became a vicious cycle. And I knew there was a better way. It had to be. I knew where everybody was going, but I just didn't feel like it, you know. I always thought this was a type of, either you're Muslim, you go to church, all of that type of stuff. And I didn't think that I could listen to somebody share for 90 minutes and not want to get high. Now, when I came around, I was still getting high. Matter of fact, I felt pretty good because I knew I had something up there. So I was all hugging and all that type of thing. But, you know, I wanted to share because if I didn't share, some people would die. So they had to hear my story. And I kept coming to the point where they asked me, like, when are you going to stop getting high? And that was a question I couldn't answer. And I wanted to share. So I came back clean. And I was raising my hand and they wouldn't call on me. And I had a big fucking problem with that. But I kept coming. And I kept coming. I said, well, I'll fix them. I ain't sharing. You know? It took me, what, 18 months, man. And then when I did actually share, I had nothing to say. Because everybody, you know, my story was not unique. You know, I thought that people were selling space in an abandoned building. I thought that was unique. But I had to ask the old time. He said, a lot of people did that. You know, you want to come in, they can rent you a space somewhere, you got to pay for that. You know. And it became very expensive to get high. And I was told the crack people would start coming in. I heard that. Ecstasy people would start coming in. You know, it's all an addiction. And I was diagnosed with AIDS over 12 years ago. I suspected it because I was running with some strange people. And I took a long time to figure out where I got it from. You know, 6 months I was trying to figure that out. Until I finally realized what happened. But then, that's not to say I could have reinfected myself over the years. But once I found that out, I didn't share about it because nobody was talking about it at the time, you know. And I had to get some type of recovery, a foundation. Because some people can come in here and get diagnosed with certain things and pick up after a long period of time. And that's when you would know where your recovery was at. And besides, I figured I wouldn't get laid, so I didn't speak on it. Until I heard one guy divulge the fact that he was HIV positive. And it seemed like he was getting more rhythm by just saying that. You know, women, you know. So I started doing that. And nothing happened. And I said, you know, this is wild, you know. So I had to keep coming to let people know where I was at with that. And that was the end of that. I always laid my marbles out. I was in a relationship over 20 years, so it wasn't a thing about me looking for anybody. But if you want to get with me, I'd have to let you know where I'm at. You know, it ain't no fucking tricks, bags and shit. I want to let you know. It ain't like you didn't know. And that's part of my journey. I came in. I listened for a long time. That was the key to this program. They told me to learn to listen and listen to learn. I'm grateful. I'm healthy. at one point I wasn't, now I'm okay, and I'm doing the best I can. So if you hear, keep coming, things will get better, then they get better, then they get better than that. You know, thanks for letting me share.
Thank you.
I'm a student of Christian Cincinnati, and our second speaker is Sabi.
I'm Nayak Kalsavi.
Hey,
and I'm really honored to be here. And this is my first convention in New York City.
Wow.
And you guys, you do a great job. It's a beautiful convention. Is anybody in this room in the first 30 days of recovery? Welcome. Welcome. Whatever I speak this afternoon, I'm speaking it for you, for the newcomer. I've learned in recovery that whatever I do, in the room from Narcotics Anonymous, I must not forget that newcomer. I must not forget from where I came from. And I just hope that I carry a clear message of Narcotics Anonymous. And I want all of you to just pray for me. And pray for all the addicts, all those members you've lost, who went out, did not come back to the rooms, and the members who died clean. I'll start my journey from when and where I found Narcotics Anonymous. I'm from India. I used in India for 12, 13, 14 years. And I do not want to get into my drug story. My story is your story. And my brother explained what he did. I did many of the things which you guys did. Maybe the drugs were different. Maybe some of the circumstances were different. But the pain of active addiction, the pain, the feelings that we all addicts go through is the same. It does not matter whether we are from a different country, whether we have a different color, whether we are rich, whether we are poor, is the same, you know. That's the disease of addiction. And that is one thing which has brought us into this room here this afternoon. And the miracle of Narcotics Anonymous is that this magic works. This magic works anywhere in the world. And wow, I'm really overwhelmed. And I want to thank the convention committee for inviting me to come and carry the message. Especially want to thank Tim. He called me up a few times, and we have been sort of playing phone tags, and you know, I've been replying his call, and then again, like, he was not at home and he used to call me back and stuff like that. I thank Mark for picking up from the Greyhound bus station and hanging out with me all day yesterday. And we used to be using buddies. We used drugs in India and we got clean in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. And that is a miracle. And I'm staying at his place and I'm really grateful to him and his wife, you know. And in this journey I met so many wonderful people, you know. And this is it. This is as good as it gets, you know. Just right here, right now, right this moment. This is as good as it gets, you know. I go to conventions all the time. In fact, this is my fourth convention this year. And sometimes I need to look at, do I have a problem there? You know? am I making my life unmanageable because of conventions? But what the hell, I do it, you know. And when probably when it gets too bad, I need to talk to my sponsor. But I tell you what, my sponsor also goes to a bunch of conventions. And I'm his road buddy. We like just get into the car and go, you know. And that's what I've learned in this journey, that you don't say no to Narcotics Anonymous, you know. If you're called to share, if I have the time, if I have that ability, I'll do it. I'll go anywhere in the world to carry the message, you know. But that's all I have. As I said, I need to always remember where I came from, you know. In 1986, I was walking across the railway track, and I was sharing with Viru yesterday, and going through my heroin withdrawal and just looking for that, my connection. And I meet a guy, we used to score every day, we used to use together, we used to meet in the shooting galleries and in Bombay, India, and we used to like use. And this guy just walked in front of me, and he was looking good. He was like, he had put on weight and he looked good. And I thought he had found the answer. He had found that perfect high that I'd been looking for all my life, you know. They found that good shit, you know, and got that best connection, and that's why he was missing. And this guy, he told me, I asked him, first thing I think I asked him, like, where you score from, you know, what are you using these days, you look good. And what this guy told me, that he does not use any drugs anymore. And he told me, he has found a place called Narcotics Anonymous. And at that time, I was really, I don't know whether I wanted to get clean, but I was curious about every aspect of drug addiction, and I wanted to, I was just looking for answers. And that was my message. I got my message in the street. And I really want to thank all the committees who carry the message inside prisons, H&I. H&I has been a very integral part of my life, you know. Anybody doing H&I out here? That's good stuff. And I think yesterday I was hearing something about H&I. Yeah, at one of the meetings we went to. And that is carrying the message inside. I used to have a t-shirt once, I get high on H&I. I had the honor of going to the first H&I meeting they ever had in India, you know. And it was such a blessing. Many days when I never wanted to go inside an H&I meeting because it was raining or thundering or something was happening, or that particular Sunday afternoon I needed to sleep. But once I went to an H&I meeting and came out, that rush I used to get out of an H&I meeting was like nothing I'd ever experienced before. You guys who have done H&I, you know that feeling, you know. It's the high that you have to feel it to experience it. And I think that is the most humblest form of service, therapeutic value of one addict helping another. I get carried away, and so I'll be like going tangent. I'll be talking something and then I'll be going somewhere else, but bear with me. And so this guy told me about this place called Narcotics Anonymous and decided to check it out. At that time, probably they were just having two meetings in the entire country, and both the meetings in Bombay. And I was one of the chosen few to be in that city and use in that city and bump into a guy who knew about Narcotics Anonymous and land into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, you know. And that was in 86. I met Viru out there in 86, and he was using, I was using. And that time the deal was go to an NA meeting. That was a better way of getting high because I wanted to know how to do it properly. I never really wanted to give up all the drugs. I wanted to use and control. I thought this is the place where you guys will teach me how to use successfully. Yeah. Because I wanted to be a success. I wanted to be a successful drug addict. You know? And we used to do weird things. We used to cop, go to the bathrooms, and we used to use out there, come into the meeting and nod. And half of the people that time, they were not really sure whether like alcohol is a drug or marijuana is a drug, with the popping pills was a drug. I don't know. So if you're not doing heroin, you're all right, you know, you're clean. And we did not know any better. There were just about 24 addicts in the rooms, that's it. Half of them were using. We did not have a basic text. There was just one basic text which was floating around in the whole fellowship. And that is how it all started. And it is overwhelming. Now India is having two regions. And the region where I found recovery, they have 108 meetings. That is of last February 2000. And that is how this miracle works. That is the magic, you know. And all of us out here, we are living that impossible dream. Who would have thought 10 years back, I was talking to Mark yesterday, you know, a guy like me, that small, thin, skinny guy who weighed just about 100 pounds, and who always thought that he was not good enough, always thought he was not good enough, always thought he was a fuck up, would be sharing at Hilton in New York City at a Narcotics Anonymous convention. That is amazing, you know. And it's a rush. Any convention I go to, I cannot really say which was my best any convention. I believe the best convention is the convention I am in, you know. Being there and now, that is the best. I said it's as good as it gets. Well, I kept on using for 6 more years. And I had all the answers. I used to sit at the back of the room. And we used to have this question answer session after the end of the meeting. And when some of the people who were like a couple of years clean, they used to ask some question. And with all my wisdom and knowledge about drug addiction, I had all the answers. And you guys used to tell me to shut up and sit down, you know. And like, listen. And it did not make sense to me then. And then finally, 6 years later, on 19 January 1992, I finally surrendered to this simple way of living. I bet my life on Narcotics Anonymous, and I've not picked up since. And that is the miracle about this program. Right now, see, the Fellowship of India has grown so much. And right now in this room, there are 4 addicts who found recovery in the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. You know, me, Viru, Mark, Karthik, and between us, in this room, we have 30 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. And that's amazing, you know. There was a time when, it was just a dream that we'll get clean and stay clean. Just staying clean for 1 hour was difficult. 1 day was difficult. I remember the time, Friday evening, I used to think that, okay, this is Friday, I'm going to use all I can. Saturday and Sunday, I'm going to cold turkey at home, and for Monday, I'll never use ever for the rest of my life. And somehow it did not make sense. Monday morning, I used to go and score and get loaded, and I thought I had screwed it up. So the whole thing used to start again. Till Friday, again, I used to try doing it, and it never worked. And when I came to these rooms, you guys told me some very simple thing. Just for today, you don't use. You never have to use again. If anything, from whatever I share, this is probably the message which I want to convey. Just for today, don't use. You never have to use again. Just for today, don't use. You never ever have to use again. And that is the beauty about Narcotics Anonymous program, the therapeutic value of one addict helping another addict. You know, because we all have been there, done that. We have all lived through that pain of addiction. And we can help each other, and in the process we can change each other's lives. I do not believe that Narcotics Anonymous is the only way by which you can stop using drugs. I know people who have used other ways to stop using drugs. I don't know. I do not associate much. I do not know too many people, but there are ways, you know. People find religion, they find medical help, they stop using drugs. But the beauty, I think, about our program on Narcotics Anonymous is that when I pass on, I would have touched some people, you know, and I would have carried the message to another addict. So it is not just about me today, you know. Today, I can make a difference. Today, you can make a difference. Today, all of us, we can make a difference. That is the beauty of recovery in Narcotics Anonymous. And that is, it's an awesome program. Like anywhere I go, anywhere in the world I can go, I can get into a Narcotics Anonymous meeting and say, I'm Sabi, I'm an addict. And you guys welcome me with open arms. you know. The best thing I heard in the meeting was like when I shared, I'm savvy, I'm an addict, and guys told me, welcome home. And this is where I found home, the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous. This is where I belong. And I've been searching for that home in so many different places all over, but I could not find. And this is the place where I had to find recovery. Well, I got clean in 92, and one of my dreams was getting back to school. I was thrown out of school in 1988 because of doing too much drugs, and it was one of the things which I wanted to do, pursue my school. So I applied in places. I got admitted to the school in the United States. I came here, and I'm going to school now, and I'm doing reasonably well. Hopefully I'll graduate next year. And it's part of the journey, it's part of the dream. And whenever I share, I always want to, you know, honor one man who made that difference in my life, in my recovery. And maybe some of you guys have heard of him, known him. His name is Greg Pierce. He passed on 2 years back. He had 28 years clean in Narcotics Anonymous. I met Greg for the first time in my first NA convention in the United States in 1996 when I came down here, and he talked about some simple things, and those things, they made a lot of sense to me, and I tried to use them in my daily living. He talked about there's no substitute for surrender. All my life I've been looking for that alternative. I've been looking for the substitute for surrender. There is no substitute for surrender, and that surrender, that complete surrender that I need to do in the first step. He talked about that sponsor. All of us at some point of time in our recovery, we try to look for that perfect sponsor. You ask somebody, you don't have a sponsor? He said, no, I'm looking for the perfect sponsor. And he used to say, there's nothing like a perfect sponsor, because your sponsor is also an addict. And he used to say something very interesting. He used to say, if your sponsor is a complete fool, you can hardly screw up your life more than what you have already done yourself. So just get hold of a recovering addict and ask that person to sponsor you, and going from there. What have you got to lose? And this guy showed me how to live this way of life, and he also showed me how to die clean. 2 years back, he had Hep C, and he was diagnosed with liver cancer. And he was called to carry the message to Winston-Salem in April of 99. And he was really suffering. He was really sick. And we went to Winston-Salem. Right now I'm in Tennessee. I'm going to school in Tennessee. It was like 4 or 5 years drive. Went to Winston-Salem. But he went there and he carried the message. And there was a room this big, this many members were there, and like about 30 members, they picked up their welcome chip that evening. He was a good guy, and he's still helping me in my recovery today. I keep on learning from his speaker tapes, the literature which he wrote. He helped write a significant portion of a basic text. His story is in the basic text. It's called I Was Different. And I really like to honor all the guys who have kept these doors open for me when I was a newcomer, and were there for me. And this convention is all fun, it's good, but what I try to do, I try to reach out to the newcomer, you know, the person who is feeling lost, who is feeling left out. I guess that's all I have right now. I love you all. Thanks.
Being the founder of Joe Bug, I'm still a grateful recovering addict.
Thank
you, Bug. After the meeting, we have Brother Understander come over here just for the day.
Good afternoon, family. I'm a grateful.